Okay, any comments or suggestions on the agenda? And the agenda's in the topic. You should all be able to see it. I'll go ahead and paste that back in here in a second. Okay. Then let's move on to the next item. Manu, can you please give us an update on the work group creation?
Yeah. So I think W3, so the vote's over. We did well. The W3C staff is now talking to the organizations that formally objected. They asked for some information from us, specifically around privacy. Have we discussed it in the past? Are we, are we responding to those? Have we responded to some of their privacy concerns? Are we going to continue to respond to them? And of course, the answer is yes. And we sent them a list of links going back to 2011, which is how long we've been talking about privacy in this work. So, and then, all the issue tracker conversations. So I think we're in very good shape there. We're just waiting on W3C staff to work through those formal objections with the W3C member companies that objected. Don't know when that's going to be over.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from anyone on that? Okay, thanks. Manu, can you help with the assignment of names? I believe Joe accidentally took Nathan George's name. There's some other stuff that's come in. In particular, error code 617. Who just dialed in?
Adrian,
okay. Thank you. Okay. Any other questions about the status of the group, the creation of the Verifiable Claims Working Group? Okay. Okay, then the next topic is the use case document issue 33, and that is here. And what I'd like to do is, I guess I'll leave it just open in general. I am going to be watching the time. We'll need to time limit it so we can get to the other issue as well. I think Manu and Joe are probably the two who are going to have comments here. So. If one of you would like to start, go for it.
Go ahead, Joe. This is your issue.
Okay, great. So this started out as simply another way to represent the tasks in the use cases, and specifically to upgrade and expand the sequences that we have. So this is just how I do it in my practice. And what came out of that exercise for me were some questions about both architecture and protocol, which I know are explicitly outside of our charter, but it was kind of hard to address some of these requirements without understanding at least a straw man architecture or straw man protocols or something in that direction. So in particular, I brought up the issue of, okay, well, how do we address revocation purely from a data model perspective. And I don't think it's quite possible without at least a nod to there has to be some sort of service or public ledger capability somewhere where that you would check for revocation. So from a requirement standpoint, that suggested to me we really probably need an architecture that can point and that we can then talk to that. So that was sort of my introduction. But Manu, what was your take on where this conversation went?
Yeah, so I think we're for 33. I agree. Like the converting the sequences to essential narratives. That's all good stuff. I think we're just waiting on you to propose some text. The conversation did turn into basically a how do we do revocation conversation. which has more to do with protocol, as you mentioned, but there's a part of it that has to do with data model. So for example, how do we express a revocation? What does it look like? I know Nate Otto and the Badge Alliance has, revocation lists for open badges that they've worked on. I know a couple of other folks in Rebooting Web of Trust have discussed revocation lists and how you do revocation in a decentralized ledger. The verifiable claims spec doesn't specify how you do revocation, so it can be kind of like identifier specific. We may want to discuss this in more detail, though. So, for example, do we want, as a group, as a part of the verifiable claims work, do we want to specify how revocation is handled? So one thing that we can put in these credentials is a link to a place you can look up revocation information. And then we can make two decisions in the group. One decision is to say revocation's out of scope, and what you find at the end of that link could be anything. It's up to you to figure out how your credentials are going to be revoked. Or what we could do is say, here's one suggestion on how you do revocation, how you model it. So when you go to that revocation URL, you should expect an object, a document of some kind that is structured in this way. And for that, we can specify what the data model is. So that's kind of those are the at least two of the decisions that are in front of us when it comes to revocation. Do we want to specify it in the group or do we not want to specify it in the group? I think, Joe, what you explained at the very end there in the issue, which is how you thought, how you thought the privacy differences would work between like ledger-based revocation and non-ledger-based revocation, and how you would expect it to work, online and offline. I think you got it right. So that's good. Meaning like you didn't have a lot of the background discussion that we had, but most of your, thinking about how it would work is correct. So I'm going to stop there. I think we have a couple of decisions to make on what we want to support, in the group and how far we want to spec this out. I should add one extra point that, our organization is going to be implementing ledger-based revocation probably in the next 6 months. And we probably are going to also be implementing URL, like HTTP URL-based revocation in the next 6 months. So we will have experimental proposals to run past the group, and then it's up to the group to see if that's work that we want to pull in or not. So I'm going to stop there.
Okay, thanks, Manu. I had a question. You basically said, there may be a pointer to an object for revocation. I was just wondering if you could say a little bit more about that, because you said we might specify sort of the syntax or structure of that, and forgive me for not being exactly up on how that works, but I'd love to hear just a little bit about what might be there.
So in the current certificate authority system, we have these things called certificate revocation lists, or the open certificate transparency. I forget OCSP, OCSF. I totally forget the letters, but it's a format for certificates that have been revoked by a CA. We're effectively talking about the same kind of thing. So part of that discussion is to see if we can reuse the CRL format, or if we think that a newer format that is more in line with verifiable claims would be better. So that's all that we're talking about there for the data model. Or the data format is, what does this new type of certificate revocation list look like?
Okay, thank you. Dave Longley, you're up.
Right. I wanted to say that I don't think that we should assume that there's ever going to be just one way of doing revocation, and I think it might depend on the types of claims that are being issued. We might need varying levels of different privacy protections, things of that nature. What I do think we should do at a minimum is specify how you can say what type of revocation a particular credential or claim uses. So, and that would be a matter of saying how to express that information in the credential itself. And I think that's what we should do at a bare minimum.
Okay, thank you. Johnny.
Yeah, I think, so I pitched this to the American Board of Medical Specialties, and revocation was an important issue to them. And I think there is some heterogeneity about actually how you would represent that. So I think it's certainly within scope. I don't think it's a high priority, but I think certainly it's an important thing it needs addressing.
Okay, thanks. Any other questions or comments before I look for an attempt at next steps? Adam.
Yeah, I just want to, I think, agree with everybody here. I don't think that, I'd go so far as to say I don't think we've done a complete job if we scope out revocation, so I think we need to scope it in. I also agree with the point that there's probably more than, you know, there's a lot of ways to do it, but we need to have at least one in scope for the project. Thanks.
Okay, so it sounds like I'm not hearing any disagreement with putting revocation into scope. So that's something that I think we can just make sure to capture in the minutes that that we agree that. I mean, I think we knew that anyway, but it's just nice to have that reviewed here. That we agree that that's in scope. Manu, you had some sort of suggestions for what we might do next. I mean, is it that we need a proposal from someone next, or what do you think is the right thing to do?
So I do want to hear from Nathan George and Nate Otto about the revocation stuff, because I know that they're working on revocation in their own, in their own system. So that's point one. I'm happy to describe for you, Nate, Nate Otto, while you kind of let us know how Badge Alliance has approached this. Next steps here, like if we look at issue 33, the issue was about converting sequences to essential narratives, and we got off topic. So next steps on issue 33, I think, is like let Joe do his thing. And see what he comes up with, and we'll review that. So I think that's the, we can effectively, that's where that issue is. We should take this, revocation thing and probably move it to its own issue. I don't know if we have, do we have a revocation use case? I'm blanking. Joe, have you?
I don't know, but...
It's a revoke claim.
Okay, it's in there. Then I think since it's in there, we need to create an issue in the data model to create a section on revocation. And someone needs to author that. I'd be happy to take a first stab at it, but only after hearing from Nathan George and Nate Otto as to where they'd like to see this go. And Christopher Allen probably is cares a bit about revocation as well.
Okay, Otto.
Cool. Hey, so yes, indeed, the Badge Alliance and Open Badges community, that Open Badges spec has now moved over to IMS Global, who is picking up that work as of this January. We do have the notion of a revocation list and also of hosted revocation, where so we have two methods of verification for an assertion of an open badge. In hosted verification, there is an ID that is HTTP-based for the assertion, and in order to check whether or not it has been revoked, you just go fetch the document, use whatever you found as the canonical document, and if there's a property revoked true that can be set if the thing is revoked. And in fact, most people usually remove all other data from the credential after it's been revoked, leaving only revoked true. There's also a method of signed verification where we have a cryptographic signature that the assertion is delivered as. This allows the use of a revocation list, as Manu mentioned, where there is a linked data document that contains an array of revoked assertions, and if you find a reference to the assertion in question by its ID or another identifying property, usually the ID, then you can assume that, oh yes, it's revoked, and within the little document, the revocation list, you can find a revocation reason. I agree, from this experience, I agree that not all platforms and users are going to want to use exactly the same method of revocation, and also we wanted to leave this specification open to things like ledger-based revocation in the future, as that may present less costs for users. If they're using a signed verification and cryptographic keys anyway, they may be sensitive to hosting costs and running persistently available HTTP services, and so a distributed method would be potentially more appropriate for those users in the long run. Anyway, over.
All right, thank you. Nathan, is there something that you would like to add? I didn't see anyone else on the queue.
Yeah, so a lot of our revocation story is centered around the idea of the anonymous credentials and using the tails list to have a way of verifying whether a particular included or not included in the definition of a particular claim. And then in addition to that, we can also extend that same type of story to handle a revocation list for a verifiable claim that isn't presented as just an anonymous credential. So I do think that we need to go through how revocation can work inside of essentially the basics of a DID type object, as well as how to handle it in a more method-specific way depending on what kind of information disclosure you're trying to accomplish as part of both issuing the claim and also revoking the claim.
Okay, thank you. Manu, you had wanted to hear from them before you volunteered to create a new issue for the data model spec.
Yes. Okay. So it sounds like what we're doing is creating a section on revocation in the spec. Seems like we have consensus that we don't want to say there's only one way to do revocation, because it sounds like we already have three different ways to do revocation right now. Someone's going to just have to take a hack at writing that section. I'll volunteer to do that because we're going to be doing that anyway with some of our implementations. And I'd appreciate, you know, Nate and Nate Otto and Nathan George's help in putting that together, and anyone else that wants to be a part of that conversation. So I'm raising the issue now.
Thank you. Just make sure, Manu, to put forward and back references with what we currently have.
I don't understand. What does that mean?
Yeah, I just mean when you create the new issue, make sure in 33 just to say,
Got it.
This discussion has moved to, and then in the new issue, continuing the discussion from, and point
Got
that
it.
To the, yeah, right.
Okay, thanks. We'll do.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions, comments, discussion on either issue 33 itself or the topic of creating a new revocation section? Okay. All right. Thanks, everyone. The next topic then is data model spec issue 12. And I'll have a link here in just a second. Okay. And again, actually, I think it was the same two people, if I remember correctly. Who wants to kick us off on this one?
I will, and then I'll hand it over to Manu. I think that worked well. So this started out initially as an open question of how do we deal with correlation in the privacy section. I made some notes. I think the notes I made, I'm going to skip. They're useful, but they're not what the issue became. So Adrian added a great what I call a use domain, and I explained in there why I'm doing that instead of calling it a use case, or maybe it's an aggregate use case. I'm still working on how do you define these, or how do you talk about these instances of usage that really are several transactions within a system, because I'm trying to establish that a use case is a single transaction. So I'm still working with that. But what came out of that were some questions about correlation, as well as a distinct, let's move some of this over to a use case conversation over in the use case repo. But then there were also questions for me about, okay, what's the architecture and how do we talk about correlation between the different entities involved in these transactions? As is typical from diving deep into the domain, Adrian's language didn't necessarily break it out in terms of architectural components and how they all work together. So I listed some questions of that. Adrian got back, and I think we still have this open issue of how do we want to talk about the architecture in this document. And then I think there's more of a process-related question or a use case-specific of how do we want to talk about correlation and preventing correlation in our use cases or in the data model so that we can nail down the privacy impacts of verifiable claims, which I think is one of our biggest issues. And that, with that, Manu, you want to give your take on sort of how this evolves?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think the use case was super helpful from Adrian to help kind of narrow down all the different types of anti-correlation that we want to build in to the system. I think it also made it clear that, like, there's some technology missing right now. We can't do anti-correlation in some of these scenarios, or rather, some approaches, like pure URL-based approaches, will correlate you strongly, and other approaches, like, for example, using pseudonymous signatures in certain places, will help preserve your privacy. So I thought it was helpful. I'm not quite sure where we can go with this. So there are two things that we have to be able to do in the working group. One of them is to make sure that we enable a privacy-enhancing, non-correlatable ways for doing all of this stuff. So, you know, that is a minimum bar. We have to provide that in the data model. The question is whether we can actually suggest anything, any standard way to do that right now. And I don't think we do, mainly because, like, a lot of these technologies are still fairly experimental. There's still systems being built out to it. There hasn't been thorough security review on it and all that kind of stuff. So we have to kind of let that be known that, you know, maybe, you know, the best I think we may be able to do in the spec itself is to say it is a desired property that these things are non-correlatable. However, if you do X, Y, and Z, you will be correlated. It is easy to correlate, right? And just do a warning effectively in the privacy and security section. And then outside of the group, we continue to work on, you know, technologies, group signatures, anonymous signatures, conventional innocence signatures to attempt to provide technologies that plug into verifiable claims without any modification to the spec that preserve people's privacy. So you know, I think next steps here sounds like we just need to document the issue, and especially all the nuances, specifically pointing out when you can be correlated. If you do X, you can be correlated. If you do Y, you can be correlated.
Thanks. Any questions or comments? Oh, go ahead.
Yes, this is Joe. I just wanted to, I noted, Adrian, I saw you on the chat. Are you on the call?
Yes.
Okay, I would just love to get your take on it, and in particular, how you think we might break down the different components about who's correlating where. And maybe you and I take that offline, and I can distill out some of the elements. But this was the real meat of this issue came from you, so I just want to give you a chance to chime in.
No, I'm tracking what's being said, and I'm glad to keep trying to help. Obviously, as Manu put it, I'm not at a point where I can relate this in terms of the technology, but let's take it offline, any of us, and we'll keep at it.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay, Johnny?
Yeah, I think just my point is that I think this is a great use case, and it's great to document it. And being a physician, and actually this is my niche of what I want to do, it's a heavy lift. And so I think this requires this is where we need to skate to, using the metaphor. But I think we need to, like, just the verifiable claim of the age for buying alcohol, you know, and person's age 25. Let's start off with that. I think a simple use case. And I think with this global vision in mind, and I think this is less, I think in the documentation it was actually saying that this is less of a use case than a use domain or a vision. And I think the technology of zero knowledge proofs is just, it's we're not quite there yet of actually applying that technology to make sure that we completely enable privacy from the get-go. So I think it's great vision, but hard to implement.
Thanks. The queue is empty at this point. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak to this?
Yes, I have one more loose end on this item. This is Joe.
Go ahead.
So I mentioned that in both of the issues we've talked about today, a desire to have some sort of straw man architecture. And I know we aren't specifying the architecture or the protocols, so I think maybe we can address at least what we did with revocation in the language about how we talk about that user task. For this kind of use domain, however, I'm feeling like I want to envision, you know, the pharmacy has its domain of trust, the doctor has its domain of trust, and specifically around things like auditability, because there are issues where we want the pharmacy to not be able to make certain correlations, but for auditing purposes, other entities absolutely must be able to make those correlations. So I would like to get some feedback about how we might address putting some architecture in these documents.
Joe, I'm unclear as to what type of architecture you mean. Do you mean like a privacy engineering architecture, like a, or do you mean something else? So specifically, what kind of architecture are you asking for? And specifically, which document would you like to see that in?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I had asked for one in general, for all verifiable claims, like these are the components or entities that are assumptions and the straw man or best practices. I think I'm willing to wait on that because I understand the pushback, and I think based on what we talked about with regard to a revocation URL that specifies how you might do revocation, I can address what I perceive as a need there by talking about that. I'm not sure what you mean by a privacy engineering diagram. So that may be a term of art I'm not familiar with. But maybe it's just that some of these use domains need some, you know, circles and arrows to explain the different actors.
Yeah.
Or the different domains of trust is, sorry.
So, Manu, I was just going to say, you're next. Go ahead with what you said. Is that also a wrapping up you're trying to do, sort of?
Yeah. I'm trying to get to the next step here. So I think the last thing you said, Joe, hit the nail on the head. So what are the privacy domains? We haven't documented those. I'm a bit concerned about trying to come up with a generalized one for verifiable claims because I don't think we're there yet. But what we can do is we can take Adrian's use case and do a privacy and security analysis on that given certain assumptions. So, for example, if you use a decentralized identifier, or like if you use a URL-based identifier and the registries here, and this is how you store the revocation information, then these are the privacy domains, right? You have to trust this party, and you have to trust this party to not correlate you. And I think we're all pushing towards something where you don't have to trust that anyone doesn't correlate you. It's just you're not correlatable. But I think if we take specific scenarios like the one that Adrian outlined, and then take the spec as we have it right now and apply it to that scenario, we'll be able to say, you know, what the privacy implications of the scenario are based on the technology choices you make. If we do that enough times, we may come up with a more generalized model. But let's start specific and do a privacy security analysis specifically on that scenario, and then as we get other scenarios and we start to see commonalities, then we can kind of start to generalize. So that's kind of a concrete proposal. People sit down and do a privacy security analysis on Adrian Gropper's use case based on the verifiable claim spec that we have now, and then show the group that document or the analysis, result of the analysis, and then we kind of go from there.
Thank you. Adrian.
Just a quick comment for Joe. I like to think in terms of privacy engineering, and your comment about this being what I put up as a use domain, I think it would be useful, given that privacy engineering is a defined thing, at least in the NIST case, to introduce that NIST document into however we decide to deal with this use case versus use domain dichotomy that you brought up that I think is also useful.
Thanks. I'm going to ask if there's any other discussion or questions on this before I ask if people are comfortable with Manu's proposal. So first, any other questions or discussions on this topic?
Hey, Adrian, this is okay. Scribe Nate. Could you restate the very last sentence that you said that it would be useful to bring that document into what?
Into the conversation that Joe introduced as to whether we're developing a use case or a use domain in the way that I brought this in.
Okay, thanks. So Manu, is there anything you want to add to what you stated, or should we just check and see if people are comfortable with going ahead with your proposal?
Let's just see what folks think.
Okay. Any objections to proceeding as Manu suggested, starting with Adrian's use case and then essentially working from there? Okay. Great. So no objections. We do need people to do that, though, right? So I noticed that the discussion was like, we can do this. We can do a privacy and security analysis. So I'm going to ask for volunteers who would be willing to work on that.
This is Joe. I'll help with this. I think it's a natural next step for Adrian's work, but I'm not deeply familiar with the specific process of privacy engineering he's talking about. So if there's someone else who has some of that background, that would be great.
So feel free to type in if you're going to volunteer or speak up. In the meantime, Johnny, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I think it's actually just beyond the necessarily engineering. I think it's just the documenting the stakeholders and do a straw man analysis to actually do who are these stakeholders. Because I think, that lies the problem, which is understanding the technology that's used in the pharmacy, in the physician, which physicians need to be credentialed, how do they get credentialed. And this is, I'm working with the American Board of Medical Specialties, and it's cumbersome right now. And so you have different, the DEA license, you have your medical license, you have your board certification. Each pharmacy actually has a license. So actually understanding the whole landscape, and then understanding the technical challenges, not actually to solving them, but actually the technology that we'll need to solve those, I think is certainly useful. And I think I can help out with understanding the stakeholders and documenting that. But I think the privacy engineering, that I think is the next step, is actually that lays the framework for the technology that needs to actually solve that.
So Johnny, the I do that you typed, was that you volunteering?
Yeah, for at least helping out with the documentation of the stakeholders. And I think, but this is a heavy lift. This is to really understand. In the background, there's also the payers. You have your employer. Does the employer allow you to be prescribed birth control? So there's a lot of complexity in the model of the flow of information. And I think it's really to understand that flow of information and the opportunities for a privacy enhancing model. I think it's important to understand what's the current state of the art. Who exchanges information with who at this point?
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Adam and Adrian as well. So Joe, will you sort of oversee this and get it started?
Yes, I'm wondering if we should set up another regular call. I think it's not going to be, a one-hour chat and we're done. I think it's going to be an ongoing iterative work process.
So, Joe, I have a question. This is Dan Burnett again. Every time we talk about privacy, we realize that there are, of course, many, many issues, and it's a big topic, right? So we have a number of issues in our issue tracker that have to do with privacy. My concern, if we have a separate call, is that perhaps there are other aspects to it that will be important as part of that discussion, and you won't have everyone on that call. Could you just, tell me what your thoughts are on that?
Yes, that's great feedback. What I meant to propose was a call about use cases on an ongoing basis. So I think fleshing out the various different use cases, and I think this is one we're going to do a deep dive on privacy. I think once we document, okay, these are the different entities and how they work together in the domain, here's who you have to trust, I think we can then take the substantive issues of how does that use case impact verifiable claims back to the larger group.
Okay, thanks. I'm seeing plus one from Johnny on that. Any other... So I think we have what we need for this issue in terms of how to proceed, this specific issue, right now. Thoughts on this proposal from Joe for a separate use cases call?
I'm a bit we're suffering from teleconitis over here. We want to help. Maybe, like, Joe, would you, I see your point and I agree with you, and if we could carve out time to focus on this stuff on a regular basis, we would. I think we can't, but we want to be involved. So I'm wondering how to help but not go to the telecon, because we can't spare the time. I'm wondering if we could you know, kind of continue the discussion in the GitHub issue tracker and just tag a bunch of people that volunteered on the call. And if we're not making good progress there, then we can go to a call. Or if we can just do one call and then get a game plan together and then move the conversation to be more asynchronous in the issue tracker. Do you have preferences, or do you want to have start having regular use case calls?
Well, I take your point. I mean, you guys have lots of calls. Looking at the larger community of conversations going on here. We could try moving this forward on GitHub, or I guess we could have an initiating call to establish, you know, some framework, and then tease out the details on GitHub. I guess I'd like to do that. In part in my questions, you know, to Adrian, you know, I think there was some back and forth there where there were good questions and answers. But I'm still not sure what to do necessarily in terms of, you know, the full domain. So maybe if we could get the folks who volunteer today, we do one call. We help frame what's the domain we're talking about, then move it to GitHub, and then we can try that.
Johnny.
Yeah, I think that's a great solution. I should suggest. I think if we have just one call to hash out some details and actually then get to work on GitHub. And this is a great use case or use domain to actually to solve. I think if we solve this, we solve many other problems, but I think especially with privacy. So it is going to be intense.
Joe, do you need something longer than an hour? I mean, we can dedicate next week's call to this if you want.
For the kickoff meeting, I think that'd be fine. So that would save me the logistical effort of trying to find a window in everyone's time, including figuring out how to contact these people who volunteered. There were just names on the chat at this point. So that would be great. So maybe we do that next week.
Okay. Any objections to that? Okay. Then, Joe, I will, you know, why don't we just coordinate on email just to, I'll basically let you take over the agenda, but I just want to talk with you a little bit about structure slightly.
Okay.
So we can just do that by email, though. Okay. Great. Let's see. Any other questions or comments on this topic? Okay, Manu. New topic.
I didn't want to. I'm not asking to change the agenda. Just a question for you, Dan. At some point, we should talk about, you know, those of us that are going to be implementing over the next 6 months and, you know, implementation test suite requirements. When did you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so I am going to be talking with the other chairs later this week about, you know, sort of what might be a good way to begin to address that. And so, hopefully we'll be sending some thoughts out to the list within a week or so.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks.
Okay, we are at the end of our above-the-line items for the agenda. So we have about 10 minutes left. It's not a huge amount of time. Let me just go ahead and suggest, ask, Joe, is there anything else that you're aware of in the list of use case issues that where we could have some productive discussion for a few minutes, maybe something that, you know, might give you an idea of a direction to go.
Yeah, that's a great question. Let me just pull up the list.
Yeah, I hate to throw away 10 minutes if 10 minutes is all you need to get something going.
I'm trying to think on my feet here. One of the tensions in our process is, sort of filtering our use cases or selecting focal use cases, depending on how you want to ask the question. And I'd love some engagement or some feedback from folks who've been in this conversation longer than I have about how we might address that moving forward, especially I think we're anticipating potentially new voices coming in. So I just want to open that up and get some input on, everyone in quotes, raise their hand and say, oh, my pet use case isn't on your list. I'm curious how we want to deal with that from a process perspective.
Okay, so Manu?
In an attempt to try and, along those lines, Joe, I think we've been we've been talking about healthcare, we've been talking about education for a bit, which is good, but the verifiable claims work was kind of kicked off and started with by the Web Payments Interest Group. And there's a group that's currently active that's different from this group that cares about things like digital loyalty, digital coupons, digital offers. These are all, at least from my perspective, these are all verifiable claims. And it should be very easy for those groups to build on top of what we're building here. Joe, the question to you is, do you feel like these retail use cases are well represented in the use cases document? Because I would hate to get into the group and then find out that people don't feel like this is a strong desire. I don't think some of these organizations are just not at the table yet. And I think once the working group starts, they will be at the table. Primarily, I think they may not be at the table because they have their own group. It's the digital offers, community group. So I just wanted to make sure that our use cases document outline those use cases, because those have been use cases for a long while. And in the reshuffling of the use cases to focus on focal use cases, we may have lost a good chunk of those kind of retail commerce verifiable claim use cases.
I'm going to let you respond to that. Yeah, before I speak, go ahead.
Great, thanks. Yes, we did. The only two retail we have are two very, I think they were young. I feel like I added them, or at least the adult beverages, I'm pretty sure I added that. So that's a young transaction. I mean, it's not even a valid use case from the kind of process rigor that I want to bring to this. So I think, Manu, what I'm hearing is, yes, we need to overall review do we have the domains that we want to focus on, and in those domains, do we have the use cases that actually matter to those domains? And I think those are valid open issues right now. Right now under retail, Manu, we just have the address verification and adult beverages, and
doesn't
have coupons.
Yeah, and we really need to – David, I think I heard you join the call before. I mean, I see this as a problem. This is a big use case for our organization, the retail financial use cases. As Shane mentioned in IRC, we used to have a lot of financial domain use cases in the document, and they kind of got – they kind of got pushed to the side. So I at least want those in the document so no one in the future can say, oh, well, we didn't really mention them, so they're not a focus. I think that's a big focus, at least in at least in the digital offers, community group that's going on right now. The other kind of heads up is like we're not coordinating with that group as much as I'd like us to, and so maybe there's a chance for us to kind of cross-pollinate, invite that group into this group so that we can, so everyone here can hear those use cases and maybe get some of them into this group more than just, you know, David Ezell and myself. And then basically make the use case the document reflect that. So again, just, you know, restate the use cases. It's digital offers, which is, you know, things like this item for sale for this price. And it also includes things like digital loyalty cards as verifiable claims. And it also includes things like digital coupons as verifiable claims. The other thing that we want to draw attention to are things like digital receipts, which I think, you know, we're going to try and raise in the web payments IG soon as a point of interest. The web payments IG is meeting, you know, they're working on their 2017 vision right now. They're meeting in Chicago in March to talk about this stuff, and it would be good to be able to report about some progress from the verifiable claims group into the web payments IG, specifically around digital offers. We really should, if we lost focus on digital offers, we should get that back in there because that is a major use case for us.
I'll go ahead and act myself now. I want to hear the comments from some others here, but we're also getting short on time. I just want to make the general statement that I think it's easy sometimes when like this effort sort of spun out of payments, right? And it's easy sometimes I think for people in the payments group to think, okay, great, they know what we need, and so we're good. But at some point, fairly soon, we're going to need to start prioritizing what we work on. And the priority for what we work on is likely to be based on the interest of those who are participating in the group. And by the way, this is in no way, so before David Ezell panics, this is in no way an attempt to to say that that the use cases from the payments groups are not important. No, in fact, it's really a motivation to say that we really want you to keep participating. Your continued participation and participation of other people from that group, from other groups, is what will ensure that that those use cases get addressed when we get to the point where we have to start focusing our work. And that's coming pretty soon. The one other comment I'll make on that is that obviously once the working group forms, things are going to change again. We'll have an influx of new people. Any kind of prioritization that we try to do now will have to be redone then anyway. So these are just a couple of general process points I wanted to bring up. Joe?
Yeah, so previously, in a previous conversation, I had suggested maybe bringing in or identifying domain experts to help in each of these domains. And I'm wondering if there might be a way to do that for the different domains that we're addressing in the use case, right? We've got healthcare and finance and retail, et cetera. I'm wondering if we can identify specific people to help corral those potential use cases. Is that a good process idea?
So if you're asking me, I'll say I think it's fine to invite people who you think will be able to help us move forward. And if you think they're difficult to get or something like that, just from a process standpoint, find a time when they could attend and let us know so we can work it into the agenda.
Let me reframe that. I don't necessarily know who I want to invite. I think for some of them, people on our calls have said, I can help with that domain. I'm more interested maybe in, you know, identifying someone who's already part of our conversation to say, okay, I want to work with you to prioritize the healthcare use cases. I want to work with you to prioritize the retail use cases. Because otherwise we've got a large mass of, you know, potentially infinite use cases. So I think to me it was more about, are there folks within our current conversation that we can earmark as, okay, these are the people who are going to help me understand those use cases and prioritize them.
I think this is a good discussion. We are unfortunately at the end of the hour, and really I think any answer I would give you to that will start a much longer conversation. So let's table that for the moment. I'm not quite sure exactly where to put it. It's a very important question about how that should work. Let's talk offline a little bit, Joe. About what might be a good way to incorporate what you suggested. All right, everyone. Just like I try to get us started on time, I believe in ending on time. So thank you very much, and we'll talk again next week.
Thanks all. Bye.
Bye.
Cheers.